A 14-cent model can blow a hole in a billion-dollar moat, but the money does not vanish. It moves to whoever remembers how the work gets done. Welcome to the Cato Daily Digest for August 1, 2026.
And that price is 14 cents per million input tokens. DeepSeek says it's V4 flash model, improved at coding and agent tasks without a larger architecture.
The report still needs outside validation, but the mechanism matters. Better post-training can raise useful performance without another giant pile of parameters.
Which changes how a developer buys intelligence. DeepSeek, GPT, Grok, Kimi, pick by price, speed, reliability, and the job in front of you.
That is already happening inside tools like Codex, Hermes, and Klein. The model sits in a picker. It starts to look less like a permanent platform and more like a replaceable component.
I would slow that down slightly. A picker makes switching visible. It does not make switching free. Prompts behave differently. Tool calls break. Safety rules vary. Teams still spend time tuning around one model.
Fair. The component has tolerances. My claim is about direction, not the endpoint. If routing keeps improving, a lab's pricing power will decay faster between major releases.
The strongest counter is that frontier labs keep producing capabilities that cheaper models cannot match. Then buyers route routine work elsewhere but still pay a premium for the hardest 10%.
Yes. Two futures. In one, frontier capability remains scarce enough to support fat margins. In the other, each new advantage is copied, distilled, or underpriced before its development bill is fully recovered.
That second future makes a frontier lab look less like a cloud provider and more like a film studio. Finance the next hit while the last one is still selling tickets.
Cloud infrastructure has physical scarcity, long contracts, and painful migration. Model weights are portable files. Distribution can extend a lead, but it cannot manufacture a shortage.
OpenAI, giving roughly 10,000 researchers free frontier access, fits that logic. It is a distribution bet. Get the model into the work now, then learn whether habit becomes payment later.
My read is that model quality is becoming a faster-moving advantage with a shorter half-life. If that holds, we should see more multi-model routing and more price cuts. If customers keep standardizing on one provider despite credible substitutes, I have read it wrong.
And the interesting question becomes less, who has the smartest model today? More, what survives when that model changes?
As routing lowers dependence on any single model, differentiation shifts toward the environments that select, evaluate, and improve those models.
That brings us to Microsoft's Echoverse. The name sounds like a virtual nightclub, but the pieces are practical. Stateful environments, memory, grounded graders, rollout analysis, and coordination.
The grader is crucial. An agent fails a task. The system identifies where it failed, repairs the task setup or the training signal, and tests again. Capability belongs to that loop, not only to the weights.
Think about an insurance claims agent. The generic model can read a form. The valuable system knows which exclusions matter, which evidence an adjuster rejected last month, and when a claim must go to a human.
Each correction becomes a trace. Enough traces become operational knowledge. Swap the underlying model, and the organization may preserve the judgment accumulated around it.
May preserve it. This is where your moat claim gets slippery. A pile of traces is not automatically useful. Bad corrections can compound too. A company can build an exquisitely detailed memory of its own mistakes.
Agreed. The loop needs grounded evaluation. Otherwise, memory is sediment, not learning.
And the workflow changes. Regulations shift. Managers invent exceptions. Customers behave differently. Yesterday's successful trace can become tomorrow's hidden bug.
Then the durable asset is not the archive alone. It is the machinery that tests whether old knowledge still works. Private evaluations, versioned policies, graders, and human review.
That sounds more defensible. It is also expensive. You need subject experts to define success. Engineers to maintain the environment, and workers willing to correct the system.
Which means shallow wrappers remain exposed. A polished interface can hold attention for a while. But if the only asset is a prompt around somebody else's model, a price cut or copied feature can erase the margin.
Claude Code and Codex can cross-sell their parent models. They also have workflow advantages, but neither gets a permanent pass. Users will leave if another tool completes more work with less supervision.
My hypothesis is that corrected workflow. Traces can become proprietary judgment because they encode how a specific organization handles edge cases. If this holds, retention should rise as the system learns. If experienced customers switch as easily as new ones, the moat is mostly theater.
There's another possibility. The learning is real, but the vendor does not get to own it.
The same traces that might create compounding advantage also create customer pressure for exportability and interoperability.
If my company generated the corrections, why should changing vendors erase them? Procurement teams will ask for portable histories, standard evaluations, and agent protocols that work across providers.
Vendors will say their memory formats contain proprietary structure. The raw trace might belong to the customer, while the scoring system and derived policies belong to the platform.
That split will be fought contract by contract. Imagine moving banks and being told you can export every transaction, but not the fraud model trained on your behavior. You technically received your data. You still lost the useful interpretation.
Good analogy. Who owns the learning generated by customer work? The employer, the worker, the software vendor, or some negotiated combination?
Workers complicate it further. An employee corrects an agent for 2 years. The system absorbs her judgment. She leaves. The company keeps a machine-shaped version of her expertise, but she may have no right to take any of it.
From the company's view, she was paid to create institutional knowledge.
That is the steel man. The straw man is, the robot stole her brain. The harder version is about bargaining power. When expertise can be captured silently through routine corrections, people may train their replacement without knowing which actions became reusable assets.
I can see that my moat language can hide the allocation question. A moat for the vendor may be dependence for the customer and extraction for the worker.
And customers have a strong incentive to resist. Open formats do not need to eliminate every switching cost. They only need to make credible exit possible.
The counter is that standardization can flatten the very context that makes the traces valuable. A medical evaluation and a sales evaluation may both have a score field, yet encode very different judgments.
True. Portability will be uneven. But buyers can still demand exportable prompts, tool histories, corrections, test suites, and policy versions. The bespoke layer can remain bespoke without being held hostage.
Then we get a contest between compounding and portability. Providers want an integrated learning loop. Customers want the loop to survive a provider swap.
Watch the contracts. If customers win broad rights to derived evaluations and memory, workflow rents get competed down. If vendors keep those assets bundled, the moat strengthens. But so does regulatory and procurement resistance.
Proprietary learning has commercial value only if it improves completed work enough to survive budget scrutiny.
Microsoft has 30 million paid Copilot seats. That proves companies will allocate budget. It does not prove 30 million people receive durable value.
Exactly. A paid seat can mean active utility, a bundled enterprise agreement, an executive mandate, or a trial nobody has canceled yet.
Microsoft's internal phrase is sharper. Applications must earn the right to exist. Bing, Edge, and Copilot are being consolidated under an organization of about 11,000 people. Each product now has to show which work it improves.
That is a useful discipline. Measure completed work, not activation. Did a seller close the account faster? Did an engineer ship reliable code? Did a support team resolve more cases without raising error rates?
And count the integration cost. If the tool saves an employee 4 hours but creates 3 hours of review, governance, and cleanup elsewhere, the demo has concealed the economics.
GitHub Copilot's mindshare. Pressure is the live warning. Incumbent distribution gets you installed. It does not guarantee preference when developers compare the product every day.
Minimax is testing the same idea from another direction. It launched H3 through Vercel AI Gateway, FAL, Palo, Pixverse, Leonardo, and OpenArt.
Meet creators where they already work. A model can lose the benchmark headline and still win usage because its button appears inside the existing production flow.
But distribution has to turn into repeated utility. Being one more button in six platforms can produce sampling without loyalty.
My read is that integration compresses customer acquisition cost, while feedback from real tasks can improve retention. If this holds, usage should deepen after the launch spike. If activity stays broad but shallow, distribution bought trials, not a business.
Cato, there is also an incumbent advantage you are underweighting. Microsoft can bundle, discount, and wait. A startup has to prove value before its runway expires.
Yes. Microsoft can subsidize learning across Azure, Office, GitHub, and security. That makes its feedback loop financially patient.
Which means we should not confuse survival with product merit. The best-funded integration may outlast a better tool.
Though survival creates more opportunities to improve. Scale is not proof of utility, but it can become an input into utility if the company measures the right outcomes.
And if users are permitted to say the tool failed. Forced adoption corrupts the feedback. Workers learn to click the required button, then finish the real task somewhere else.
That is a good human metric. Shadow workflows. If employees constantly root around the official agent, paid seats are overstating value.
Useful feedback requires psychological permission as well as technical logging.
Capturing useful feedback requires permissions, sensitive data, and credible incident handling. Trust, therefore, controls access to the moat's raw material.
An enterprise agent becomes valuable by seeing consequential work. Contracts, customer records, internal code, payment systems. That access is also what makes failure expensive.
Microsoft has appointed Hayat Gallot and replaced at least 9 security executives. The action gives its AI control problem an organizational owner.
Reshuffling leaders does not secure a system. But named ownership matters because incidents otherwise bounce between product, security, legal, and communications.
Trust. Here is not a warm feeling. It is permission. Which tools can the agent call? What does it log? Who can inspect the trace? How quickly can access be revoked?
And what does the company say when something goes wrong? Anthropic's cyber incident became a credibility test because critics challenged both the control failure and the language used to describe it.
Bill Gurley objected to the euphemism. Gary Marcus focused on autonomous internet access without demonstrated control. Public satire showed that safety branding no longer settles the argument.
Anthropic's strongest defense would be that early reports are incomplete, precise attribution takes time, and careless disclosure can create more risk.
The strongest criticism is that softened language protects the institution before it informs the customer.
Exactly. Incident communication is part of the product. If a provider minimizes a failure, customers cannot judge what permissions remain safe.
My hypothesis is that accountability will become a competitive input because enterprises grant more access to vendors they believe will surface failures quickly. If this holds, trusted systems should receive broader tool permissions and richer data. If procurement keeps buying mainly on price and benchmark scores, trust remains a slogan.
I would add one condition. Trust must be observable. Logs, escalation paths, access controls, independent testing. Reputation without evidence is borrowed confidence.
And there is a feedback consequence. Less trust means thinner traces. Thinner traces mean weaker customer-specific learning. A security failure can damage the proposed moat directly.
That is the cross-story connection I buy. Not trust matters as a theme. Trust controls the flow of training material generated inside real work.
Even trusted systems must generate returns before infrastructure costs and leverage outrun falling model prices.
Microsoft is getting valuation credit for Azure growth, 30 million paid Copilot seats, and cost control. It is also cutting Xbox Studios and pulling capital away from discretionary consumer bets.
The restraint has a cost. People lose jobs and projects disappear. Financial discipline is not an abstract virtue when the budget moves from games into data centers.
Oracle is taking the opposite financial posture. Bonds, credit facilities, and asset-backed debt are funding a build-out on the premise that more compute will produce enough revenue.
Leverage makes the timing visible. Interest payments arrive on schedule even when customers do not.
You're framing risks giving Microsoft too much analytical credit. It already has Azure distribution and large cash flows. Oracle's uncertainty looks worse because debt exposes it. Markets may simply prefer the incumbent balance sheet.
I concede that. We cannot infer superior foresight from a lower financing risk. Microsoft starts with advantages Oracle cannot copy cheaply.
And both could be right. Demand may grow enough to fill Oracle's capacity while Microsoft earns high margins through software and distribution.
Or both could face pressure if model prices fall faster than workflow revenue grows. Cheap inference expands usage, but it can also compress the price of every unit sold.
Then the key variable is not how many tokens move. It is whether the surrounding product captures recurring revenue after compute, integration, support, and governance costs.
My read is that capital discipline becomes more important as intelligence gets cheaper. If workflow ownership produces high margin revenue, infrastructure earns its keep. If it does not, leverage magnifies the gap between usage and cash flow.
There is a clean test. Watch whether revenue per customer rises as the system learns. If usage rises while margins fall, the feedback story is not paying the infrastructure bill.
And that takes us to the person supervising the loop. If the workflow remembers every correction, what must the human still know?
One professor began teaching in 2025 and found universities had largely left faculty to absorb classroom AI alone. In her own experiment with corporate language models, she reported weaker memory, poorer judgment, and repeated dead ends.
One account is not a general result.
No, but anecdotes can expose a mechanism worth testing. When assistance removes the need to recall, compare, and struggle, those faculties may receive less practice.
The best counter is that external memory has always changed cognition. Writing, calculators, search engines. We gave up some internal tasks and gained capacity for harder ones.
That future is plausible. The other future is institutional de-skilling. Workers lose the ability to notice when the agent is wrong, while the organization becomes more dependent on the system that holds its memory.
So the question is whether machine memory increases effective capability or merely relocates it beyond human reach.
Use my competence reserve test. Remove the tool for a day. Can the team still diagnose errors, reconstruct key decisions, and perform the dangerous parts manually?
If not, the organization has efficiency without resilience.
Universities make that tension visible because grades, employability pressure, and contingent teaching labor make shortcuts rational. Buying more AI services does not repair those incentives.
More permanent faculty and stronger teaching relationships might do more for learning than another detection system.
And workplaces need an equivalent. Time for review. Recognition for correction. Training that preserves domain judgment. Otherwise, every human check becomes ceremonial.
This updates how I would state the workflow moat thesis. I began with ownership of traces. That is incomplete. A system compounds only when people remain capable of producing good corrections and contesting bad ones.
There is the harder economic point. Human competence is not outside the feedback loop. It is part of the productive capital.
If firms treat skilled workers as temporary labeling infrastructure, the trace quality eventually degrades.
And if customers can export the memory but no longer possess the judgment needed to interpret it, portability becomes formal rather than useful.
Then the moat is not a database full of yesterday's answers. It is a living arrangement among tools, evaluators, workers, and rights.
Which leaves the ownership question unresolved by design. The vendor built the system. The customer supplied the work. The employee supplied the correction. It each has a claim.
At the start, a 14-cent model blew a hole in a $1 billion moat. What remains is the memory built around it, and the real contest is whether that memory becomes shared capability or somebody else's lock.
Until next time.
Keep your judgment in the loop.